This morning in this hour, Focus, we will return to a subject that we've talked a bit about, and it's something that is often referred to by the shorthand phrase, the digital divide. The fact that if you take a look at who it is that has computers, uses computers, is involved with the internet, it tends to be more middle and upper income folks and not so much people on the lower end of the scale, perhaps for obvious reasons, one being that computers can be a little expensive and you got to pay for internet access and not everyone has that kind of money. We will be talking this morning with some folks who are involved in a program, actually a program here in our area in Champaign-Urbana, but also in East St. Louis to try to provide computers and internet access and some training to lower income people who otherwise wouldn't be able to do that. We have three guests here with us in the studio, Martin Wolski and Paul Adams from PrairieNet, which is the community computing network here in Champaign-Urbana that has its home in the library school, and also Varkey George. He is professor of urban and regional planning and is also the interim director of the East St. Louis Action Research Project. And as we talk, you're certainly welcome to give us a call if you have questions or comments or you'd like to participate in the show in any way. 333-WILL or 9455 and toll free 800-222-WILL. Well, thank you all very much.
Thanks for having us.
Just maybe for anybody who doesn't know what PrairieNet is, why don't we just talk about that for a moment? What is PrairieNet all about?
As you mentioned, PrairieNet's a community computer network. We were founded at the Graduate School of Library and Information Science back in 93. We served as one of the first ISPs, Internet Service Providers, in this community. And since 93, we've extended the types of services that we make available to the community. We host websites, have bulletin boards, email. We also provide training. We work very closely with the Urban League and other groups in the community to provide training to low-income individuals. And when we get donations, we recycle those computers and get them out to the community. We also provide technical assistance for organizations that would like to have a web presence or would like to purchase computers to help with their own activities. We're involved with that as well.
Okay. Then let me turn to Professor George and have you talk a little bit about the East St. Louis Action Research Project. What's that about?
Sure. The university has been associated with the city of East St. Louis since 1987, but really it was in 1990 that it became the East St. Louis Action Research Project. Mm. And it's characterized by two rather unique approaches to dealing with communities. One is participatory action research, where we work on building scholarship not separate from communities. We don't treat this place as a laboratory that we go and study, but rather we work with the people who are in these, in the neighborhoods, in the community, to generate knowledge. A second aspect of it is service learning. So we have a number of courses, including the recent one in Library Information Sciences, where students who work on university courses who actually are involved in community projects, where they work with community in exchange for the knowledge they gain from the community, they deliver back some kind of a service project. It could be building a neighborhood park. It could be rebuilding a community institution like a church. It could be installing computers in community technology centers. So we have a range of things like that. So it's been there. It's been in existence since 1990 in that form, but we've actually had the association with East St. Louis since 1987.
Mm-hmm. And I gather then your involvement then with the PrairieNet folks came because people that you were working with in East St. Louis said, we need computers and we need machinery, we need hardware, we need training, we need help because we think this would be a really important community development tool. They said that to you, and then you apparently said, well, the PrairieNet folks have done this here in Champaign-Urbana. They seem to have some expertise. That's how they became involved in this?
Right. Well, if it goes back a little further than that, we've actually been engaged in using the Internet and web-based resources for delivering information. See, that's the way we connect ourselves with the community because we are 180 miles away. Now, that was, you know, with Mosaic coming up here, we all got interested in that. We did a lot of web-based information delivery. At some point, we realized, though, that we were delivering information, but there wasn't the capacity in the community to receive the information we were sending out. And we did try in several instances to set up small technology centers and computer labs, but we realized that we didn't really have the expertise to do that kind of work. And that's when Paul and I met last year, and then the logic of us collaborating on this was really clear.
Yeah. Well, so what sort of things have you been involved? Have you BrainNet guys been doing there then, East St. Louis?
As we started looking at this as a possibility, it quickly became apparent that we were going to have to bring in a lot of resources to try to refurbish computers, to build labs, a lot of what we do naturally, but it does take a lot of human power to work with that, especially the donated computers we get that have to be tested and refurbished. When we were looking at this last summer, it quickly became apparent that a course I teach, Introduction to Networked Information Systems, had all of the people power we needed. And we realized we could take the 40 students that were in that class, use them to help us do the work. I modified the course so that their final project would be setting up 4 different labs within the East St. Louis community. The students, then, we had received a donation of computers from Taven Technologies up in Chicago, and they had given us 120, 130 computers to work with. We were going to shoot for having 4 labs of 10 to 15 computers or so we needed 60 working computers. We had the students work through the semester, kind of beating up computers, finding all their flaws, what wasn't working. Of the 120 computers we had donated, we managed to get almost exactly 60 working ones out of the package. They developed the computers. They took 2 trips out to East St. Louis. The first one, as Varky was mentioning, it's more than just doing it and dropping it off and saying, there you go, this is what we came up with. We actually made the first visit. The students looked at the sites. The students sat down and they spoke with the people who would be receiving it, found out what sort of interest they had, what they were going to be trying to do with the computers, and then the students custom tailored the computers to actually serve those needs. The second trip then was to actually deliver the computers and set them up. We have since taken a few other students out on a couple of different visits to fine-tune some of what was out there, to add some capabilities like internet access so that the whole lab could have internet access. And we're now developing the training manuals to help the sites maintain those computers and do basic troubleshooting. And so it's gone through all of those different steps. It's never a matter of just dropping it off. It's always a matter of figuring out what they need, designing it to suit those needs, and then training them to actually use the computers and to maintain those computers.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, Martin, you should probably mention that some of those students in last semester's course, this semester, are working on a practicum
independent study, yeah,
in which they continue their relationship with the technology centers that they helped set up. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I mentioned is when they were there, they were not just doing technology stuff. Some of them helped fix a neighborhood park. You know, it's a broad based collaboration. I think So students get this. First of all, they get a very real hands on kind of experience. Wouldn't you agree, Martin, mm-hmm. that your course has been transformed in a sense by them being able to have this really
Well, I think the way you have it set up as well, the initial part on your first visit is actually a tour of East St. Louis to see an overall image of what's happening there, what some of the challenges are that are faced. So it's not a narrow focus on just technology, absolutely. It's a broader look. We had lunch at a soccer field that had been transformed the first visit we were out there and watched the kids playing soccer. So there's a lot of feedback that's going on.
So what sort of things, the people then who are using, the people in East St. Louis who are using the computers, what sort of things are they using them for?
Well, let me give you an example of, or let me kind of summarize what the different, we've got 3 faith-based organizations that have set up a technology center. and a youth organization. The faith-based organizations, they basically deliver training to local residents that are in their local area. And this could be an introduction to computers. It could be slightly more advanced word processing and things like that. But it's essentially training-oriented. To give you an example, Dr. Rose Kotlusk, she gave up a job she had in the St. Louis metro area to become the pastor of the New Beginning Outreach Ministry in Centerville, which is next door to East St. Louis. And she uses the technology center that has been set up to provide training to people in the immediate vicinity, but she also hooks it up as an incentive for people to come and have health checkups, for instance. She's actually a registered nurse, and actually she used to teach nursing before she took up this job. Mm-hmm. So the technology center is an integral part of what she does, of what her outreach ministry does.
Another example with her actually would be as well that she recognized a need for budgeting, having people learn how to work with finances more. So once she gets back the introductory Windows training, she actually then offers a second course, an add-on course, that looks at how to use the spreadsheet capabilities of the computer to develop personal financing software that helps them learn how to do more effective budgeting and financing of their system and track what's going on of their household. So a lot of it goes beyond. So it starts with here's how to use a computer, but it moves on to here's how to improve your lives using this technology. Yeah.
I think that all four sites are really user-driven. In the case of New Beginning, if there are individuals who come to Dr. Lusk and say, I need to learn Word because there's a secretarial position that's opening up, and they say that I have to have that in order to apply, then she will create that curriculum and offer it just as in the fourth site, which is not faith-based, but a youth recreational facility. They want to get into the kids actually learning how to work on computers and possibly an entrepreneur relationship where they could work on computers for people out in the community and make a little bit of money.
Hmm. Let me here just take the opportunity to introduce our guests for anyone who might have tuned in the last little bit here. We have with us in studio Martin Wolski, Paul Adams from PrairieNet, the Champaign-Urbana Community Computing Network, and also Varkey George, who is the interim director of the East St. Louis Action Research Project. He's also professor of urban and regional planning. And we're talking about some of the activities in East St. Louis that has, in a sense, involved both the Action Research Project and PrairieNet in setting up some computer labs there to provide people experience with computers, some training, internet access, and so forth. And questions, of course, are welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. I'm curious about how much exposure in school there in East St. Louis young people get. I mean, do the schools, are they also making some effort, or do they face also a resource kind of problem, and for them it's difficult to provide that?
Yeah, they do face a resource problem, but they also face kind of real prejudice about the ability to do this kind of stuff. So, Jonathan Coval's Savage Inequalities, everyone's read it. Everybody looks at the school district as being, the worst possible. But so they're working under those resource constraints and kind of the prejudice. But within that, I believe they're doing the best they can. So, for instance, in one of the high schools, they've actually started a Cisco Academy, which is that they train students to work on Cisco networking equipment. Mm-hmm. Paul, you may be able to say more about the Cisco Academy, what the Cisco Academy is. But so they have programs like that. They have a fairly well-fitted out computer lab that introduces students to robotics and software of multimedia software of various kinds. They've got people trained in that. So they do have some resources. They've made a beginning there. But clearly they need more resources, and they need people to be more supportive of what they're doing and not be very critical of what they're doing. Mm-hmm.
The short periods of time that they get in the school also are a good start. But that isn't where all the consolidation happens, and that isn't where they learn to start taking it beyond what just the basics they learn in a school. We were just, when we were out there last weekend talking with Greg Lewis at Bride of Christ, he was pointing out the difference between the youth course that he has and the senior course that he has. He's teaching two different courses. They're each six-week-long courses. And one of the seniors also is now sitting in on the youth course and saying, why aren't we getting to learn all that stuff? And he's pointing out, well, they learn a lot of it at school. They have a lot of the basics. But there's still a lot of the consolidation that happens in the middle and upper class homes that have the computers at their home that doesn't happen with the lower class community when they don't have access. So having that additional access at a lab really makes a difference.
Because, you know, if you look at our lives, technology pervades it, and so it's easy for us to keep up with things and to use this in effective ways. But, you know, for many of these, the infrastructure isn't there. So for many of the kids, while they may be exposed at school, there isn't that pervasion of technology in their lives that really is needed for them to be able to have the skills to get them into the job market and things like that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I guess I was really wondering, when you look at the people who are using these computer labs, whether they're primarily adults or whether they're also young people in this, whether this works out to be an adjunct or a supplement to or somehow builds on whatever kind of exposure they get in the classroom and in school. And it sounds like, indeed, yeah, that is one of the things that it does.
Right.
It sounds as if there's a lot of a volunteer effort going into this. The computers were donated. The students worked on them. There must, though, somehow be some expenses if internet access, if nothing else. What actually does this end up costing, and how do you cover the cost?
Well, the bulk of the cost is apart from, you know, the donation of the computers and all that, the bulk of the cost is travel, keeping, you know, putting people up there and things like that. And the East St. Louis Project, that's what we do. I mean, we fund that kind of activity because it's a service learning course. It contributes to the people of East St. Louis, and so we cover those costs. I can't give you an estimate of how much it costs, but it's fairly significant. And but we have a budget for service learning or outreach and technical assistance, and we use that to cover the costs.
And there's also a cost for the host sites, too. I mean, they have to incur the cost of, you know, keeping the lights on and, you know, paying the utility bills and also the internet connection and a phone line. So they have some contributions to the project as well.
That's actually been our last visit again when we were at Dr. Scott Lust's New Beginning Outreach program. She showed it, noted that she has had to cut back on the amount of training she could provide because of the increased heating bills. $700 for the last heating bill, and that was with cutback services. If she had tried to do all the after-school programs that she had wanted to and had to heat the building, she couldn't have afforded it. So, there's even not the direct cost. There's the increased electrical cost. We don't often think of that, but computer, monitor, speakers, they draw about 2 amps. If you're running a lab of 15 computers, that's 30 amps that you're drawing. Well, that adds up in additional utility costs. So they come from a lot of different areas.
Hmm. But these folks try and recover their costs in very innovative ways. So, for instance, Dr. Scott Lask will have I think, $5 or $10 fee for doing this course. But Don Holt of Computer Village, which is another organization working there, he says, just bring a tin of canned food, and that's your contribution to it. So, you know, they have all different, they have costs, many of them cover it through their operations, but they have interesting and innovative ways of recovering some of those costs, mm-hmm. or at least making the training more meaningful to the people who are getting it.
Some of the bigger challenges we're starting to face now, though, are when you do look at internet access costs. The $10, $15 per month that you can buy internet access would seem trivial, but down there you have connect charges that are then added on and add to your phone bill. You also have issues of access speed. When you look at phone quality, the phone quality there is not sufficient to run at 56K, let alone 33.6. In one case, we've had to downregulate down to 1,900 baud. Well, you know, you start going at that rate, and that starts making a significant difference. Not 1,900 baud, 19K, but it makes a significant difference in the quality. So you have to start looking at either paying to upgrade the phone service or find alternate methods. And that's some of the struggle we're going through right now as well.
Have you found other organizations in East St. Louis, once they see what these folks are doing, stopping by and saying, oh, this looks pretty interesting, and other people thinking about trying to do the same thing?
Yeah, we've actually formed what we call the Digital ESL Collaborative. And that's a group of about 20 or so different community-based organizations, local government agencies that are interested in the digital divide and in bridging the digital divide. Mm-hmm. So we started meeting in October of last year. And we've put together a number of proposals for funding the collaborative itself. Because one of the costs, actually, we didn't mention is the whole coordination and coordination of all these activities, and that's a fairly significant consumer of our time. So, for instance, Paul and I and Kathy Klump, who's the director of our Technical Assistance Center in East St. Louis, spend a large amount of our time on this, and it's a cost we really haven't taken into account. So we're looking for funds to support this collaborative, to have somebody administer, to provide administrative support for this. But the collaborative has actually, by coming together, we've become aware of that maybe 17 to 20 different technology centers that have been formed independent of our efforts, which we didn't know of. Mm-hmm. So by bringing together, we've really increased the awareness not only of our efforts, but increased our awareness of what other people are doing. So, for instance, Southern Illinois University at Edwardsville has set up the Griffin Center, which is, again, a youth-oriented computer technology center with assistance from Sprint, I believe. Sprint has a campus compact or some kind of program like that. And theirs is quite successful. But it wasn't until we formed the collaborative that we really got a good sense of the range of activities that are on there.
We have a caller to talk with. Let's do that in Champaign County, and it's line 4. Hello. Their caller there on line 4 in Champaign County. Well, okay, maybe he'll come back to the phone in a minute. Let me again introduce our guest. We're talking here with Martin Wolski and Paul Adams from PrairieNet, which is a community computer network here in Champaign-Urbana, based in the Graduate School of Library and Information Science at the University of Illinois. And also joining us is Varkey George. He's interim director of the East St. Louis Action Research Project of the College of Fine and Applied Arts at the U of I. He's also professor of urban and regional planning. We're talking a little bit about some of the efforts that they have all been involved in trying to provide some access to computers, computer training, and internet in East St. Louis. And questions are welcome, 333-WILL or 9455. Also toll-free, 800-222-WILL. One thing maybe Professor George can talk a little bit about, I guess I'm just sort of curious about what's going on these days and how things are going in East St. Louis, because it's one of those places that at least in the past, one would think of as being just about the most economically disadvantaged area in the entire state. How are things going in East St. Louis?
Well, I go to East St. Louis quite frequently, and so sometimes some of the positive changes escape me. But somebody who had been in 96 on one of our work weekends, who went back last year, was saying there's been a huge improvement in what he saw there. But there are still some very serious challenges, economic primarily, but also here's the basic problem in East St. Louis. It's lost about two-thirds of its population since 1964. So from about 90,000, it's now down to 30,000 and falling. What that means is you've got only one-third the number of people to support the infrastructure, the government, and all the amenities that we take for granted here in Champaign. To give you a sense, Champaign, the Park District, spends about $35 or $40 per person per year Whereas in East St. Louis, that's about $5 per person per year. You know, there just isn't the resources available there to do it. These numbers are, by the way, from Bruce Wicks, who's a professor of leisure studies here, who's involved with us. So some of the key challenges have been this. How do you deal with abandoned and derelict properties? Because, you know, when people leave, they leave the properties as they are. Some of them are, have absentee landlords or owners, and they're really deteriorated. So there have been a fair amount of efforts by community-based organizations to deal with these problems, and they have been quite successful. So, for instance, with fairly limited resources, these organizations have demolished and cleared something like 3,000 abandoned properties. The one thing that's made kind of a big difference has been the new light rail, the light rail system. There was a light rail system that was built from St. Louis Airport, Lambert's Field, to downtown St. Louis, and then extended across the river to East St. Louis. That has opened economic opportunities for the people of East St. Louis in huge ways. Probably more so. So, as a public or a federal expenditure, it's really produced a lot more benefits than we would have expected from most such investments. We've got increased in interest in investment in housing. So we have a local neighborhood that's going to be investing about $30 million in new housing around this light rail station. So there are very clear positive trends we see in East St. Louis, but there are very clear challenges also. So, for instance, the city's infrastructure is crumbling, and it would take something like $100 million to fix that. And we don't know where that's going to come from. The digital divide is a huge issue. But I think the core positive aspect of this whole thing is the strength of the people and the community organizations that they form. Because they've, you know, like all the examples we gave you, they bring their time and their talent to produce innovative, interesting ways of dealing with their problem. We are there to help them do specific things, but these are all their ideas and their efforts. So, to answer your question, I believe the situation has improved a lot, both in terms of the city's ability to deal with its problems and the people's ability to deal with the problems also.
I think we're going to try again with our Champaign County caller here, line number 4. Hello.
Hi. Yes. I just have a moment, but some apocryphal stories from the area were that some of the abandoned derelict buildings were in that way from the 1914 riot that happened, which was not just a riot but an attack on the African Americans living there. And another one is Buckminster Fuller was quoted as saying, this may or may not be the case, but his argument was that East St. Louis was the worst ghetto in the world from a holistic point of view because of the lack of a vision of the people there. I hope that's being overcome by community groups, but it supposedly was the case when he was there, and that was probably the late 60s. Are there other units that are doing things there? I understand. I guess maybe I didn't hear the introduction, and maybe you were representing the East LARP, I think that's what it's called, if I just know a little bit about. But on a more general notion about the digital divide, I don't know if people saw this, but one of the places where this discussion was taking place was by the FCC, and the commitment by the Kennard, I guess was his name, the chair. The most recent chair is the son of Colin Powell, and he supposedly said, digital divide? Well, there's a Mercedes-Benz divide, too. I don't really know if this is the case, but he basically is diminishing the idea of a digital divide as a social justice issue, and doesn't look good. That's all I wanted to say at this point. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Thanks. Well, I don't, and maybe it might give us an opportunity, I guess, just to maybe again sort of make the point about why it is that access to computers, having some computer skills, internet access might be in something important for lower income people. I suppose some people would come along and say, you know, there are a lot of other things that disadvantaged people would need more than a computer. And yet, at the same time, I'm sure you all be prepared to argue that, you know, that's very old thinking. Why would you say that the digital divide was indeed an issue and something that would be important for us to be addressing?
I think, first off, we need to look at the community in East St. Louis. They identified the digital divide as an issue, that's something that was very important to them. They either felt that they were being left behind, they didn't have adequate resources, and I think a lot of it comes with wanting something better for your children and seeing computers, computer use, computer knowledge as a means to maybe not only help the community but help the children in East St. Louis to move beyond the community.
I think some of what we've discussed in the past as well is whether you're talking about the digital divide as something that's related to the dot-com society or whether it's more of an organizational issue, .org sort of thing. And we talk a lot about dot-coms, and everything is dot-com these days, and what are you doing with dot-com and e-commerce and e-trade. And if it's just a matter of that, there certainly is some issue whether there's a valid reason for bridging a digital divide. Is it because now they can't afford the Mercedes of shopping online? They have to use the Ford of having to go to the store. And then you can have a discussion whether the digital divide really is valid or not. But I think when you look at the digital divide as something that represents information and a totally different lifestyle change that is happening, an information economy, then I think the digital divide is something that's very relevant that does need to be bridged, that it is a lifestyle change. It's a different way of living, and more people move to that, and the people who move to that are the ones that are able to get the better-paying jobs, that are able to make a change in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Actually, kind of two quick comments. One is you don't have to go to East St. Louis to see the digital divide. You have in Champaign, Illinois, you know, so it's not that far away. About the digital divide in East St. Louis, I mean, I gave you the example of the light rail system, right? I mean, there was a physical divide between the people of East St. Louis and the jobs in St. Louis. And by bridging it with the light rail, we were able to have a significant impact on people's lives. Their ability to deal with their own problems was facilitated by giving them access to job opportunities. It's exactly the same thing with the information age. They are on the wrong side of a barrier between this whole world of opportunities that we take for granted. You know, and there must be something done to bridge that divide, because what it will do is not just from a sense from to be fair or from you know, to promote equity, but because it will help them deal more effectively with their own problems. You know, they will not need, you know, handouts or things like that. They can deal with their problems more effectively if they are allowed to bridge that divide. Just like when they were allowed to bridge the river or get access to the jobs, it's the same kind of impact I think will be felt mm-hmm. by bringing the digital divide.
On previous programs, I think Paul and Martin have both been here, and I think that we have talked about the idea of community computing and what that's all about. And there also has been a lot of talk about computers being an isolating technology, particularly the computer in the home, this idea that somehow people are spending time in front of the machine that they previously would have spent interacting with other human beings face-to-face. But I think something that I know that you are interested in is this idea that the computer and networks of computers can be tools for community building, which is something that on the face of it some people might really not quite get. Is that something that you can talk about?
When you work with a computer, and for many of us this is a natural process anymore, we have our email accounts and we have our web accounts, and we are getting better at seeking out information and sharing information. But when you work with a committee, by and large, you still do it face-to-face. When you try to develop ideas, you often first do it face-to-face. That what the technology does well is allow for you to do follow-up sharing of information. It facilitates the passing back and forth of appendices of information, if you will. But that face-to-face meeting is still what is the crucial aspect to building the relationships that allow for collaborations to happen. That happens within the academic community here at the university, but it also happens in business, and it also happens within the community level. That most of what we do in community building and helping communities to build themselves first happens face-to-face. And then the technology is something that's added on to help facilitate above and beyond that meeting, which makes them more cohesive and a better product overall.
I would argue that there's also a different impact. Yes, computers could be isolating, but the technology centers that we are creating are actually becoming social places in neighborhoods that don't have social places. So, you know, many of those social institutions have gone. And really, the technology centers represent one way of filling that huge hole in those neighborhoods. So technology actually could have the effect of drawing people together more so than they are right now.
I think also, too, because East St. Louis is in such a large geographic area and people are scattered throughout, that by developing these centers, that they now are able to share information with people in another region of the city. I think as we build more of these centers, then you'll have more people involved and more people know what other people are doing in that community.
Some of the success even of building the centers has often relied upon using public gathering places as the beginning point. That helps to make the technology less intimidating because they're not going into these pristine white-walled environments. They're going into their public centers. And it's now just something else that's at the public center instead of being just a totally different place, an ostracizing place.
Yeah. The centers that you've been working with, is one of them actually in a church?
Three of them are in churches.
In churches.
One is in a youth organization.
When you said that one of the things that had happened was you discovered that there were other people that you had not been aware of that were doing the same sort of thing. Is it fairly common that some sort of faith-based organization ends up being the host?
It's quite common. But we also have, for instance, the Red Cross's Second Chance Shelter. I think it's it's a shelter for women, and they have, and women and children. They have mm-hmm. a thing. So it's a wide range of things. But yes, I would think that a majority are faith based. Am I right, Paul?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd like to go to one comment that the caller made about Buckminster Fuller's statement about the people lacking vision. I don't know, the first time I'm hearing about it, but that is a common problem. People from the outside, even some of our students, we go look at what is visually a really sad state of affairs, and we tend to blame the people who are there for that state of affairs. But that's if you look at it at a surface. If you look below the surface, there are all these heroic stories, really, of people who do incredible things within these limited circumstances. So Catherine Dunham, for instance, she has dedicated the rest of her life to East St. Louis. She's established a museum there. She lives there. She conducts dance studios there. I don't believe it's for a lack of vision that the people have. It's just that there have been so many, it's been ignored for so long. The place and its problems have been ignored for so long by us, by the state, by the nation. That's where the problem lies. It's not for people lacking vision, I think. They have the vision. They don't have the means to realize the vision.
Mm. And I suppose the longer infrastructure problems go unattended to, it just gets worse and worse and worse, and just makes it that much more difficult to deal with just the most sort of basic sorts of issues. There must be so much groundwork, so much repair, so many things you have to take care of first before you can then get onto other things.
To prepare the one lab that we worked in, we actually had to have a different work crew come in to patch holes in the walls so that you didn't have snow landing on the computers. There's a variety of problems. Each of the sites that we've had to go to, they've had to do electrical upgrades or face outages because of short circuits. I mean, you know, yeah, there's a lot of infrastructure work that has to be done in each of the places, and that continues to become more and more of a problem as that deteriorates.
Another illustration. The property tax rates in East St. Louis are highest in the state of Illinois, I believe. Rates, you know. Because they have to raise a certain amount of revenue, and so the rate that they charge property tax is the highest. Right? So what that means is when you put a new building, a new house, a new home on one of those properties, the actual tax that you pay is huge. So, you know, they may have a vision, but there are these kinds of problems that, you know, just don't let them do anything about it. So, it kind of riles me a little bit when people go to East St. Louis and say, oh, these people are lazy. They're not motivated enough to do their own, you know, fix their own problems. It's just there's so many things that act against them improving their situation.
We have just about 5 minutes left in this part of Focus 580, and questions are certainly welcome. And maybe I should real quick again reintroduce our guests. Martin Wolski, Paul Adams are involved with PrairieNet, the Community Computing Network here in Champaign-Urbana. Avarki George is a professor of urban and regional planning. He is also interim director of the East St. Louis Action Research Project. And questions welcome, 333-WYLL, toll-free 800-222-WYLL. I assume that this is something that you would like to continue doing and perhaps expand?
We're thinking in the short term, say in the next 12 to 18 months, of expanding the number of sites that we have currently down there, which are 4, to possibly 8 or 12. And as Varki had mentioned, we have been trying to secure additional funds both from the state and the federal government to help us do that. One of the things that we mentioned earlier was the infrastructure, in particular the phone infrastructure, and how it was of poor quality. And this creates problems with people trying to dial up and have internet access. So one of the things we'd like to do is use the East LARP office down in East St. Louis as a point of presence, and then try to get broadband to that site and then be able to provide that internet connection to our partners in East St. Louis, possibly by using a wireless system, thereby bypassing the antiquated phone system.
Mm. And it's actually a really replicable solution, because East St. Louis is an example of several areas that have this population spread out over a large area. And with crumbling infrastructure, so really wireless may be an effective way of getting this internet connectivity to these, you know, far flung technology centers and users.
Go ahead. I don't know if we had something.
To prepare, we're also soliciting donations of computers and such.
This is just what I was going to ask, as a matter of fact. Whether indeed you were still interested in used equipment.
We are, in particular, ones that are coming from office settings work particularly well because, first of all, you get them in larger batches, so they're identical hardware, which makes it easier to put into sites. Second of all, they're often networked, so they come with the network cards already in place. Those two combined really help us set up the computers. We've, in the past, used a lot of disparate odds and ends pieces. The amount of effort that goes into recovering those and preparing those has just really become quite a challenge. Mm-hmm. When we get a nice large batch of office computers, it's much more simplified to put the items in place. But absolutely, you know, if we can get a significant donation of computers in place next semester, next fall, I could take my 315 students and we could start all over.
And if there are people interested in volunteering their time on computer-based projects or other projects in East St. Louis, we're looking for volunteers. Can I mention our website?
Oh, of course. Of course.
It's www.eslarp.uiuc.edu. There's a whole bunch of information about the project and about East St. Louis and about volunteer opportunities.
Hmm. Well, we're just about at the point where we've used our time. Are there any last things you'd like to leave with folks? Not really. Okay. Well, again, we say, well, first of all, if people are interested in finding out more about the East St. Louis Action Research Project, of which Varkey George is interim director, again, that it is the address, their website is www.eslarp.uiuc.edu, so you can check that out. And, of course, if people were interested in volunteering their time, they can get in touch with you. And also, if people are interested in talking with the PrairieNet folks about donating machines, equipment, maybe first might be a good idea to call and say, here's what I got, can you use this, and then go from there.
That would be wonderful, absolutely. Our main number is 244-1962 to call, they can give a call there and contact us, and we can make arrangements to take a look at the equipment, pick it up, or have them drop it off.
Okay. Well, I want to say to all of you, thank you very much for
Thanks.
Being here.
Much appreciate
we appreciate it. Martin Wolski and Paul Adams from PrairieNet, and Varkey George, he is involved with the East St. Louis Action Research Project. He's also a professor of urban and regional planning at University of Illinois.